Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with
Shoshana Keith Jaskol.
Today, we are talking about, why it is that get refusal constitutes abuse. Because we've been saying this for a good long time. Other people who work in the same field say this, you know, all the time. And likewise, all the time, people say, what do you mean? How is refusing to give a get any kind of abuse? It's just one of the tactics, one of the negotiating aspects, elements of divorce. Divorce is messy, divorce can be ugly, and everybody pulls out all the stops. This is just one of the tools to which we
and
say
there's
no.
There's two sides to every story.
Not this one, Shoshana, not this one. Before that, this happened.
A very interesting thing happened in Israel this week. The Supreme Court voted to recognize non-Orthodox conversions in Israel for the sake of citizenship, which means that someone who has converted in a Reform or a conservative conversion to Judaism is eligible to become a citizen of the state of Israel under the law of return. The law of return allows for any person who has one grandparent who was a Jew to become a citizen of this country. And therefore, it actually really matters a lot in terms of whether a person is counted as Jewish or partially Jewish. So now a convert of either Reform or conservative can be a citizen. And the Haredi parties are extraordinarily unhappy about this and unfortunately have said some really nasty things, Anne.
Really nasty things. Really kind of crossing the line, inappropriate things. I understand where they're coming from. I understand that they think that this is giving greater credibility, any credibility to the progressive movements within Judaism, right? Reform, conservative, reconstructionist, whatever it's going to be. And they're right. It does give credibility to those movements, even if it's still not a matter of the ritual, religious aspects of their experience. And really, citizenship, it doesn't matter. The state is recognizing something that the Haredi rabbinate never wanted, you know, never wanted to have credit recognized.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I gotta say, yes, I understand all the ramifications of what happens then when the person who converted by Reform conversion, whom the Orthodox doesn't consider Jewish, then marries, you know, becomes a Baal Tshuva, let's say, and doesn't reconvert, but then marries or the grandchildren marry Jews, and now you don't know who's Jew and who's not a Jew. So part of my reaction to this is a little bit, I'm gonna say, faith-driven, a little metaphysical. I do trust that God can work this all out on our behalf without us having to fight each other quite with this degree of animosity. I don't know exactly how. I'm not pretending to be God either, right? So that's one reaction I have. And the other reaction I have is that for all that this is a very big dramatic deal, it's also really not. Because the state of Israel has been recognizing non-Orthodox conversions from outside of the state of Israel for the purpose of Aliyah, for the purpose of the law of return, for a long time now, not a long time, for several years. So the Haredi rabbinate and the Haredi parties went ballistic then also. But in terms of numbers, this is not really significant.
Minuscule.
It's really symbolic in terms of the big change that's coming. Okay, it is. I understand the concern. I do. I'm sensitive to it, and to some degree, I share it. And also, okay.
And you're not walking around calling people dogs with kippahs or shiksas either. So
right, exactly.
You can be concerned and not be a not nice Yiddish word that I'm not going to put on the air.
I mean, that's the part of the problem is that the infighting here becomes so vociferous and so nasty that there's no way to have a conversation about what's supposed to happen then. If the Haredi parties went to the Reform and Conservative movements and said, we have this concern about the disparity in who's calling whom a Jew going forward. Can we sit down at a table and bang our heads about this for a very long time and maybe come up with a solution? Again, I don't have the solution. I think this is a hard nut to crack. But if they would have a conversation, then there would be hope to fix it, as opposed to just name calling and mudslinging and throwing chairs at the kotel, meaning like it just becomes out of hand in every which way.
Well, it's bad faith all around, unfortunately, and political. As we know, it's very hard to have a conversation when you're drawing lines in the sand and refusing to look at the other person. Which brings us to our next topic of this happened. I don't know how many of you are on Instagram. I know, Anne, you have fought to join Instagram. I have given in, and I have to tell you, this past week, or I would say 3 weeks on Instagram, has been incredible. Seeing women who normally use their platform for selling makeup or jean skirts or headbands, who are just turning out in grand numbers for this woman who is actually being refused a get. Her name is Chava Sherabani. She's in Eguna now, or Mesurevet get, for about 9.5, 10 years. And she reached out to a woman named Dalia Oziel and asked her to please post her husband's picture up and to say that he's on the run. And Dalia didn't just post it. Dalia has literally made this her life. And if any of you are on Instagram and have no idea what I'm talking about, look up the handle Free Chava, look up Dalia Oziel, look up Pink Out Thursday, and you will see very well-known Jewish female influencers who have given over their platforms to talk about get refusal, to shame Naftali Eyal Sherabani. He was hiding in plain sight as a mashkiach in L.A. They're from originally from the East Coast. And now he's actually left L.A. because of all this pressure. And they have found him now in Vegas. And I'm just telling you, if you want to see what it looks like, activism and someone coming and people, hundreds of women, if not thousands, I can't count it all, rallying around one woman to say, give her the get. And I'm telling you, women who have never done anything but sell things. I mean, they're lovely women, but they've used their platform as their business. And they've just turned it into activism. It is unbelievable. I would say this happened and it's still happening.
I should note, right, that we are recording this in advance of it being released, the podcast itself, right, this episode. So right. I can only hope that by the time you all are listening to this, it will be a thing of the past because Chava will indeed have been freed, right? We can't know that. We can't know what the next several days will bring, but the fact that the past week or so has become so active means that there is certainly hope for something to change quickly in the next few days. You never know. When somebody's been this recalcitrant for this long, who knows?
Which kind of brings us into our topic. And it's an interesting thing when people say, and we get this a lot, you know, there's two sides to every story. And in general, I do agree with hearing different perspectives. There's no question. But let's just be clear what's happening here. When a Beit Din, certainly in America, agrees to publish a man's name as a sarvan, a refuser, that means that the Beis Din has done everything in their power to convince him, to try and get him to the table, to say, you are obligated now to give your wife a get. She deserves a get. You have to give a get. And he just keeps refusing. It takes a long time for them to be like, okay, we've done everything we can. Now publicize his name in the hopes that this shame will entice him to say, you know what, this isn't worth it. I'm just going to give her the get. So are there two sides, Anne? Is there something to be said about this?
So on the two sides question, I will say as follows. There are always, in a marriage, right, there are always two perspectives. There are always two people with their own respective experiences. When we talk about two sides, and when I say so boldly, there's no two sides here, in part because I really believe that, right? But it sounds ridiculous because, of course, there's still the two experiences. The reason I say that there's no two sides is as follows. When we're talking about the question of giving a get, meaning somebody has asked for a divorce, somebody has maybe not wanted the divorce, meaning the two parties are not necessarily in agreement. Maybe neither of them wants to continue the marriage, but whatever it is, something in this marriage is not working, at least for one of them, to the extent that they have gone the distance to be at the point of waiting for a get. Sometimes it is the man, right? So for the man to waiting to be able to give the get for it to be accepted. So the problem here is as follows. There is a mitzvah in the Torah, in Sefer Devarim, that where it says the man should write his wife, soon to be ex-wife, a bill of divorcement. Meaning that is the mitzvah of divorce. And for me, that's the bottom line, right? There is a mitzvah of divorce that kicks in at the point when a couple is getting divorced. And all of the rest of what happens in divorce, all of that messy, ugly business that we talk about, which can be custody arrangements, which can be financial disagreements, which can, right, all of the ick of dividing lives that had been united is a separate, terrible morass that is still, in my understanding of halacha, independent of the requirement to give a get at the time of giving a get, because it's a mitzvah in the Torah. And when somebody says, I'm not going to give a get now, even though the Beit Din has required, you know, issued a call for a get, then what does that mean? It doesn't mean all of the details of the divorce have been set. It means that the phenomenon of the mitzvah of Mesirat HaGet, the actual transfer of the bill of divorcement, is being ignored. And to me, that calls into question the mitzvah in the Torah. And I feel like, what are you doing? You know, like, that's why there's no two sides about the question of giving a get. Once there's a requirement by the Beit Din to give the get, everybody should be complying with that. And to say that because one party has the right, I mean, the obligation, really, the get is in the hands of one party to give it to the hands of the other party. Neither of them should be refusing. The man should not be refusing to give it, and the woman should not be refusing to accept it, because in either case, they're obstructing the mitzvah and using it for leverage over the other person. And that's where we get into the capacity of talking about get refusal as a matter of abuse. Because the moment you're lording your power to withhold or refuse to accept the get, then you're in a situation of controlling the other party via leverage, via, you know, via this particular logistical mechanism, right? The reason the man has to give
power.
The get, it's power. Because that's the mitzvah. That's the way it's written. That's the way we do it. It's not two-sided, right? There's no, what's it called? No fault divorce. The man has to give the get to the woman, because that's how it's in the Torah. So now keep the Torah, fulfill the mitzvah of divorce, and let the court and the lawyers and Tohanei Beit Din, whatever, figure out the agreement. The divorce agreement is a separate thing than Netinat HaGet.
Right. So I think it's important also to mention, when we talk about who is being refused and who is refusing, and this goes into numbers and we don't have to get into it too much, but it's important to understand what it means. There are those people who are in the process of divorce or have been in the procedures for a long time, and either the Beit Din has ordered him to give it or her to receive it, depending on who filed and what's going on, or they're still going and back and forthing and the Beit Din has not told him or her to give or accept it. This affects the way that she specifically is considered, whether she is a misereved get, which we call aguna, right? Like we lump them all together. We've spoken about this before. And so again, by the time these things have come through, the shaming, whether it's in America or whether it's in Israel, the Beit Din has already made that declaration of this person needs to give or receive and the other person is being refused. And that's when what you're saying kicks in. It's very interesting what you're saying. Like I personally feel like if someone wants the get, then withholding it, you know, saying I want to work on my marriage is a completely legitimate thing. Saying that you want to have a therapy session or two, that's a legitimate thing. But once it's clear the other person is either has done what they're willing to do or isn't willing to do so, then there's nothing to be held on to. And I feel at that point, for me, anyone who's being refused, man or woman, is at that point being is misereved get. Many people may or may not agree with that, or they may agree with shades of that. They may agree that there's different positions, but certainly everyone will say that once the Beis Din has made that declaration, then it's not even a matter of opinion for us anymore, whatever country that's in, right? So for example, just to bring it to Israel for a second, when we spoke about this last week, Shira Isakov, she asked for a divorce after her husband had nearly killed her, and he refused. And there was a national outcry, and the Beit Din ordered him to do so and said, and we're going to put you in solitary confinement if you don't. They used their power, they used their sanctions, which does not occur outside of Israel. You know, the Beit Din doesn't have any criminal or I should say civil powers outside of Israel. And she was able to get her get. There are other women who are waiting for their gets in the same position, some of whom do have a chiyuv on that man and some of whom do not. But I agree with you when you say there's two different perspectives. In any argument, there's perspectives. That's why we go to Beis Din for when our chickens eat somebody else's worms. I don't know. This is all the stuff, because two people have the right to say something. But once the Beis Dins make that decision, so that is the decision. And anyone who afterwards is refusing, so they're really not just refusing their wives, they're refusing the Torah, right? Because we say that the Beis Din is the one who's putting. So now you have this man who's living in L.A., as a mashkiach, by the way, I had nothing to do with it. They got him fired. And now he's moved, run to Las Vegas, where there are other, by the way, very well-known get refusers. If you remember the Kin case, Lana Kin is still waiting for hers, and her ex-husband is married. He's actually took a second wife.
This is the problem, right? Meaning, even, I will say again, even in a case, a clear-cut, awful case of abuse, there is still the perspective of the abuser. Maybe he was abused as a child. And I'm using the male pronoun just because it is more common that it would be a man who's done the abuse. We know, obviously,
but not always 100%. Women,
of course, yes. Right? Meaning the fact that we're speaking in streamlined generalities does not mean to the exclusion of the other, the possibility of the alternative cases. But again, an abuser has his or her own story, right? But at the end of the day, we as a society are not, I hope, we're not going to countenance abuse. Now, what does it mean to not countenance abuse? There's laws that prevent us from like just going in and ripping the abuser away from the victim. But the sentiment, the desire to do that, right? The idea that we want to root out abuse, and the way to do that is very easily just separate the two of them. That's going to be the best way to stop the abuse happening. So then in this case, it's honestly the opposite, right? If one party is using the get as leverage against the other party, then the way to handle that is, you know, get them to the Beit Din. Nobody should be able to run away and hide, which, by the way, in once upon a time, you couldn't do that as easily. Transportation was not as fast. There wasn't so much of a place to go. Maybe you could run to the next shtetl, but maybe they'd send you back. And societal pressure would say, well, you don't want to give this get, but too bad, we're going to make you do the thing that the Beit Din is requiring you to do. This phenomenon of get refusal in this way is new.
Yeah, that's quite modern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Meaning there were always shaloneda, there were always agunot because somebody was lost at sea, because somebody was lost at war, because the world didn't have all the information at its fingertips. The old kind of aguna is much harder to have today because we do know more. We can track people better by their phones, whatever, right? But the new kind of get refusal, the new kind of aguna, which is really simply what you said before, misurevit get, someone who is the victim of get refusal, I think it's just nasty. Somebody is exerting leverage. It is not an equal fight. It is using halacha against another person. And I think that it brings everybody down. If the Torah is
totally agree with you
to elevate our lives. And I don't know what it says the Torah is, right? Meaning we live Torah because God commanded it, even if it isn't feeling particularly uplifting. But here's God's command, and here's man, meaning mankind, women saying, no, I don't think we're going to do it that way. We're going to do it our way. I'm going to do it my way. I'm not going to give the get, even though the Beit Din has said that I should. I want to note that for the most part, we often talk about how the Beit Din doesn't issue that chiyuv get, that obligation to give a get, as often as there is a demand for it. So all right. The more so, right? This kind of case, this kind of free chava case is so patently obvious to me anyway, what the side of right here is. Because no matter what the man's perspective is, he is avoiding the edict of the Beit Din. The Beit Din said what to do, and he has run away.
Right. So it's interesting that you say that, because now that this has come out with Chava, so other women have actually started to show their own stories more and more and more. So what happens is, like, someone else contacted us and said, you know, I'm also an aguna for 9 years. I kind of just gave up on myself. Would you share? And now everyone, all the women are reshare every 24 hours. You know, in Instagram, you have stories that run out in 24 hours. So someone will share it, tag me. I'll share it, tag them. They share it, tag me. So it just keeps running on a loop every 24 hours. So nobody really drops it. And the more and more and more it goes.
What kind of social media is this?
Oh,
I
yes.
mean, again, I'm, oh, yes. I'm not on Instagram, but this idea that it disappears in 24 hours, and it's supposed to be the kind of thing that the message is to keep going. Like, I appreciate how the women are doing, but you do understand how,
yes.
how it sounds. Like,
it sounds nuts. I know. But you know what, Anne? I've been an activist for a long time, as you know, and I've seen a lot. But I got to say, this is the first time I've seen so many women from so many various, like, you know, wigs, tichels, no head coverings, jeans, shorts, shaitels, England, America, like, all saying free chava, free chava, free chava, free chava, free chava. Now, I, as someone who's done this for a long time, really, really hope that once chava is free, that this continues until it's no more chavas, no more agunot. Like, I hope that the shvung, the momentum that has occurred from this incredible case and these incredible women, I want you to know something, don't call me a blasphemer, but when all this was really, really happening, I was like, I understand now what it means, nashim tzadkaniot. Like, these women have made a decision.
No, wait, is that blasphemy? That's the opposite of blasphemy.
No, because I was going to say, b'zchut nashim Instagram. Oh. Nigalemi.
Nashim Tzedkaniyot, right? The whole message of Nashim, look, we're coming up on Pesach. We can talk about this.
True. Let's do it. Okay, let's do it.
The idea is, and this is the Nashim Tzedkaniyot of the Pesach story, are women who saw the wrongness of the decree and stood up for the right. Right? Meaning they stood up to make sure that people would not be, I mean, in this case, obviously, right, we're talking about the midwives and we're talking about Paro's decree against the Jews. It's much, for all that we think that get refusal is terrible, I would say that Paro's decrees were much, much worse. Nonetheless, the phenomenon of Nashim Tzedkaniyot standing up and saying that in their merit, all of Bnei Israel were redeemed, the idea is that sometimes it takes whatever grassroots people seeing wrong and standing up for right and banding together, which is what the midwives did in Egypt and it, you know, back in the day. And it's what you're telling me again. I don't really understand Instagram, but it sounds like that's what's happening here in terms of people banding together and saying, this is no longer okay. Now,
yeah,
I'm curious, and I know we don't really know the answer to this, but I'm curious what the Beit Din is making of the.
I can tell you.
Oh, really?
Because I know, because it's on Instagram. Yes. Okay. So Dahlia is actually, I'm from Lakewood originally, you know. I mentioned this a few times.
I know.
It's the only yichus I have. Well, that's not true. My dad's a Kohen. Okay. So basically, Dahlia says that she's been in touch with a Lakewood Basin. I say Basin because it's Lakewood. Sorry. Lakewood Basin. And they are encouraging her and all the women of Instagram to post. And in this chud of all the posting, by the way, for the first time in 9 years, he was in touch with Basin.
The man,
Eyal Naftali, he calls himself both, actually got in touch with Beis Din and made a list of demands that he wants in exchange for the get. And one of them was remove all social media posts now and forever.
Which is astounding, right? Meaning when you talk about the power of social media, and there is a lot of ill in social media, which is why I'm on very few platforms and I don't use my Facebook account, right? Which we do a lot of Chochmah Nashim Facebook stuff, but I use it differently than I think many, many other people. And still, I feel like sometimes you turn around and there is social media as a force for good.
Yes, 100% agree with you. And as I said, I really do hope that we will use this as a springboard for whatever that decision, whatever that, you know, change is, and I have my ideas for really making sure that this is it. Like, Jewish women are not going to take this anymore. And the institution of Jewish marriage should no longer have this terrible stain on it, right? Like, we really should really make sure that this doesn't happen anymore. Hopefully, by the next time we podcast, I will have a very positive, like, resolution to tell you for Chava, and that hopefully Naftali will do the right thing. So stay tuned, and we'll let you know. Obviously, if you're on Instagram, you already know the answer.
You're hilarious.
But if you're like Anne, you're hilarious. You can tune into the podcast.
I trust you. You will tell me. Right?
Yes. What's your dish, Anne? What's your dish?
Okay. So my dish brings us very far afield from this topic, which I find to be kind of depressing and hopeful at the same time, but certainly very serious. I recently watched a movie. It's an Amazon original. I'm not sure if we should be plugging for them or not, but this, such as it is, it's called The Map of Tiny Perfect Things. And my dish is not even so much about the movie itself as about the idea of there being tiny perfect things, meaning that it's a really complicated story about how time stops for these two people. And every day they have the same day again, right? Like Groundhog Day. And they talk about the movie Groundhog Day. But the idea is that they get to know every little movement of everybody else in the town on that day because it repeats. And they get to see the janitor of a furniture store sit down at the piano and play beautifully with nobody watching. He thinks nobody's watching because nobody is watching except for these two strange people who have been locked in time and are repeating the day every day. Or in a senior citizen's home, whatever, where an elderly couple gets up and dances and they are there to observe it because, again, they're kind of spying on everything going on. And a bird that catches, it's a bird that catches another bird, I think, in its beak. I'm going to mess it up. There were too many beautiful moments. But the idea is that the line is the devil's in the details. And I feel like a lot of religious people like to say that God is in the details. And I feel like some of those details are these small things that when we are, and especially coming off the year that we've all just had, no matter what your year was, it was different from every year before, right? That much I can say with confidence. And there are so many small things that we can appreciate in a different kind of way. And that's what this movie was all about. So whether you see the movie, it was nice, but that's not the point. The point is the stopping and literally smelling a rose, that is a mark of beauty. And that coalescing of all of those things together are really, I think, the claim in the movie is kind of like, that's what makes life worth living, that we end up with this experience of all these little things that they punctuate our lives in a, and that's the tapestry of it, right? Much more than the big things. The big things are, of course, important, but the little things are where we find our daily joy.
Where you find that, yeah, sure. Anyone can relate to trying to find joy in every moment that they can. So I'm just going to make my dish very quick because that was a lovely way to end. My dish quickly is that the 8th of March, which is now International Women's Day, we will be or have done, depending on when this is released, a protest across from the Jerusalem Beit Din, demanding, requesting that the Beit Din and the Jewish state protect Jewish women, and that any woman who has been abused within her marriage should automatically get her freedom. The question of whether it's with a get, whether it's with a hafgat kiddushin, that is not our decision to make. The Beit Din just needs to make a decision so that no woman who has already been abused has to be abused further and wait for her get. It should just happen. B'mher b'yameinu amen. And hopefully the next time, as I said, we podcast, God willing, we will have updates for you.
Thank you for joining us. Rank us, review us where you get your podcast. Come talk to us on our Facebook page and tell us what you think about, well, get refusal. We know some of you will disagree with us. Some of you will rally to the cry. And if you're on Instagram, go follow free. I don't know what the right words are. Free Chava. Follow it. Share it. Share it. Share it. Share it. Chochmat Hashim. Chochmat Hashim.
Can you hear us now?